Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
I'm Brianna Kurtz, host of Eat Your Words. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, this is Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. If you missed the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just Food is a nonprofit organization committed to helping people building community food projects. We know that people all over the city know that we need to change our food system, and they want to make that change, but so often people don't even know where to start. So we'd like to take the next half hour to introduce you to someone who started, taking his passion and skill to bring change. Hopefully his story will inspire you to create your own Just Food story. So I am delighted and think it might be a little bit of a miracle that I have in the studio with me today, Reverend Robert Ennis Jackson. You have to listen to the list of things that he is the co-founder of. He's the co-founder of Brooklyn Rescue Mission, Urban Harvest Center, Healthy Harvest Food Pantries, Bedford-Stuyvesant Farm, and Malcolm X Boulevard Farmers Market, and Marcy Plaza Farmers Market. So this is a very busy person, and I'm so delighted to have him in the studio with us today. I want to talk to you about everything, but Reverend Jackson, it's been such a long time since I've seen you. How have you been?
Working hard and working on community, so I think that things are pretty good.
I'm glad to hear it. Can you take us back? Because I want to talk to you about Brooklyn Rescue Mission and all of the work that you're doing there. But how did all this work start for you? How long have you been doing this kind of work?
My wife, Reverend Devaney, and myself have been doing community service and outreach since 96. We've started off servicing homeless individuals and shelter systems with inspiration and encouragement. And we saw so many people change their lives. Maybe they had a one pair of shoes, a shirt, and a pair of pants, but with motivation and encouragement and support, they were able to gather resources and overcome their homelessness. So we started with that emphasis of encouraging people who were homeless.
So what came first in your life? Was it your marriage or your mission?
Actually, I was a person who wasn't in the church. I didn't go to church. Here's my saying. I liked the Jets and the Giants, and they were religiously watched. But my wife was a church person, and she encouraged me to visit a church one Sunday. And I got there, and I heard a positive word, an encouraging word of life, and I never turned back.
Wow. I mean, that is just amazing. So how does... Now, so you came into the faith through meeting your wife. How has your faith impacted your work, or your work impacted your faith? How does that cycle happen in your life and in your marriage and in your work?
I think that I do have my wife, which is encouraging to me to actually have me go back in the church. But I have a life community training. My father is still alive. He's 77. He's a community activist in his community. My mother, who's passed, was a missionary and community activist in her community for over 50-some years. And I saw them doing work for community. So even when I wasn't in church, I was encouraging residents in the community. I think that people being empowered to have sovereignty over their food, their health, their economics is important. And I think that from an early age, that was embedded in me to try to be an independent person and have others around you become independent.
And so you've now created, together with your wife, this incredible... I mean, the project is just bursting with life in the community in Bed-Stuy where you live. Tell us about the project. Can you lay it out for us and kind of paint the picture for people who haven't been to your community? What does it look like there?
Well, Bedford-Stuyvesant, when we began the work, was different from what it is now. Mm-hmm. It's a changing community. Mm-hmm. It's still considered a community which lacks a lot of food options. As you know, Jackie, there's a few communities in New York, in the Bronx and Queens, that are considered food deserts. Bedford-Stuyvesant lacks healthy food options. Mm-hmm. It lacked vegetables. It lacked the ability, fresh vegetables. It lacked the ability for people to have choice, not just in going to the supermarket, but choice in the local store, or even trying to have a restaurant, trying to have a bakery. A lot of things were lacking when it came to food, fresh food, and quality food. Mm-hmm. And our work based on the fact that we're progressive, but we're charitable, but also a social justice program that's entrepreneurial, that we began to reshape what we thought was the food system of Bedford-Stuyvesant with a lot of help from partners. So as a pantry provider, we do run a food pantry that services many families in Bed-Stuy. At our height, we served 1,000 families a month. We will be probably continuing that process. And we saw that folks that were getting pantry food or food donated food, it was even less quality. Mm-hmm. So we had to figure out how to get fresh, healthy, organic, or fresh conventional food into the hands of pantry guests. Mm-hmm. So we started Bed-Stuy Farm.
How did you start a farm? I mean, it's you've painted an incredible picture in terms of like the dearth of good food resources in the community, and the fact that the people who are the most nutritionally vulnerable also get the poorest quality food most of the time. So the need is very clear. How do you go from saying, I think we really need a farm here, to realizing that vision?
First off, I was around fresh food as a child. Both my grandfathers and grandmothers were farmers, so I got to see fresh food grow. So I said, let me engage. We had a lot behind the missions mm-hmm. house. So we said, let us engage and try to reshape this lot into a growing area.
And was it a big sunny lot, or what did you have to work with when you
first? It was very, very wild. It had a lot of bushes. Uh-huh. My first people that helped me clean that lot to get it prepared for growing were folks who were struggling with substance abuse and addiction. Mm. And for 2 weeks, these gentlemen, it was five of them, came out and helped me clear the land and cut and do things so we could grow. And within the first week, two of the guys said, I think I need to go into rehab. And by the second week, I think only one guy had maintained that he was okay. He didn't have to do something to change. And I saw that people putting their hands in the soil had an immediate impact mm-hmm. on lives. So I would thought we were at a good start with this farm. Mm-hmm. Then the seniors who are part of our pantry, have many of them are from the South, from the Caribbean. We're very excited about being a part, so they helped relearn how to plant, along with help from the farm educators or farm people here in the city. And it was exciting because the seniors enjoyed helping to plant the food. So our first farm year was about people who were getting out of addiction, helping us clear the land, and then seniors helping us plant food and then enjoying the partaking of eating that food.
It's so wonderful to give people the opportunity to contribute to the way that they're going to be fed, especially the community that you're serving through the mission, the people who, you know, they feel like they have so little power that they're coming to get that kind of help, but then they can grow it themselves. It's a great opportunity you're offering people. How has working with the community shaped the way that the project has evolved? The work that you're doing has evolved. How do you feel the community? How do you reach out to the community to get their input in shaping the project?
Thank you. That's a good question. I think over the last 10 years, the community, be it low-income community or middle-class community or community that has good financial needs, has been better educated. The children in the schools are getting a different education about food. Mm-hmm. So the young people that we're dealing with and the food population we're dealing with is a little bit more educated than they were 10 years ago mm-hmm. or 12 years ago. They're learning about what nutrition is, what why you should eat greens. They don't think they're being programmed anymore. They mm-hmm. understand it's about their health. Now, there's still some naysayers that believe that you're getting in my business and I'm going to eat what I want. But I think that from serving those that are in the pantry, they realized that there had to be a change in the state and the city providers, along with the nonprofit providers, are trying to provide better options and healthier options than ever before. I think with the gardening world, and New York City has a very exciting gardening world, that people enjoy growing their food in the summer. We have two farmers markets and a farm stand. That came out of the community asking for a farmers market and then having a community partner join with us to create another farmers market and then having another community ask for a farm stand. So people are requesting more service around food.
It's great that you have that give and take with the community that's kind of asking you to do things, and then you, by engaging that community, can rise to those occasions. And the farm has grown tremendously, it sounds like, from those early days of just clearing the land to a really productive site that can grow 2,000 pounds of fresh food a year. That's really outstanding. Is that the food that goes, does it go into the pantry and into the markets, or what happens with that food?
It used to be a time where a lot of the food would go into the pantry. The first, we started off just distributing it to the pantry. Then it came a time to provide it to the market because the people in the community were saying, well, we're really not impoverished or we're not, you know, in need. We would like to pay. So it was in the beginning 50-50. This year, I'm very excited. I have three farmers, those farmers are organic and natural.
So three farmers for the market?
For the different markets.
They're coming from outside of the city.
One of them actually lives in Brooklyn, but has a farm upstate in Franklin County.
Uh-huh.
So he's actually a dual resident of two counties in the state, I guess.
And what's the name of that farm?
That's J&R mm-hmm. Farms with Ralph Porter. Mm-hmm. And then we have David Hutton.
Yep.
Okay, and we have Rost Oba.
Yeah, okay. And he farms in Vermont, doesn't he?
Yes, he comes a long way to provide fresh food.
Oh, but that's great. I think from what I know of the farmers you talked about, a lot of them are very social justice oriented, so they must be very enthusiastic about being a part of your market.
I think that they like community. I think that when you're talking about farmers and food on farm market stands, that community, when they talk to the farmer, they have certain levels of relationship and loyalty. Mm-hmm. And I think that those guys are able to do that.
Why do you think they're able to do that?
Because they're able to talk to their customer. They're able to explain how the food is grown, what some of the qualities are about the food. Sometimes they're even able to explain why the food will make you possibly healthier.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Ross, you know, talking about what the quality and characters of the food and how they react to the body. I think that once people are talking about food as well as tasting food and they understand that their health benefits, they will expand their horizon about what they try. I think those farmers do that well.
I think there's a real myth that in some of the communities, especially underserved communities where there isn't a lot of fresh food access, there's kind of a myth that people living in that community just don't want it. How do you see that myth? Where do you think that came from? And how, in your experience, have you seen that that really is just a myth?
That is very deep question, because there's a lot of situations that created that myth. When people think of Bedford-Stuyvesant, they thought of the poverty rate. Bedford-Stuyvesant is a mixed income community. Just like East New York and Queens, you have folks there who have high incomes and middle incomes and low incomes. They want fresh food. And I always say to the farmers, you're missing out on a very lucrative economic opportunity. You're assuming that these people don't have money. The community has money. That's one of the first myths. Mm-hmm. The community doesn't have money.
Right.
community drives in cars and goes out shopping to the big centers because they have to. Mm-hmm. And they're investing. Now, some people do shop by, if they're on income or benefits, they shop by the time they get their money. But there's enough mix in these communities where the farmer will not have a shortage if they're producing a quality product. People tell each other when it's quality. You just get more customers. Mm-hmm. Now, from an end of why that myth exists, I think that we still in the food world have to deal with generalities. What people assume other people, they might be of color or they might be of age, what they're able to do. I think that once you begin to break down these barriers, generalizations, that you'll get a better food world where people are able to see food shared as well as economic development. And Bedford-Stuyvesant, one of the things I'm pushing at my markets is for the new entrepreneur, the new Bedford-Stuyvesant to mix with the old Bedford-Stuyvesant, and it'd be around food. Have a food culture where it interacts, old and new, where you have a mixing of cultures so that people have understanding.
I want to ask you more about that. We're going to take a short break right now, but we'll be right back with Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org.
Program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Did you know that pollinators are needed for more than two-thirds of the world's crop species? Most of these pollinators are bees. However, North America's bee population has been steadily declining since the 1990s. Whether you live in the country or the city, you can show your commitment by hosting a hive in your backyard or even on a rooftop. The beekeeping movement is growing, so you're sure to find swarms of folks who can help you find your way. Learn more about the ways you can help be the solution at WholeFoodsMarket.com/sharethebuzz.
You have been listening to This One by Snowmine.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org. And we're here with Reverend Robert Jackson. We've been talking with him about Brooklyn Rescue Mission and the Urban Farm Project, the farmers markets, all the incredible work that they're doing there to grow more food in Bedford-Stuyvesant and get that food out to the people who need it most, whether they're market shoppers or pantry clients. And it's just building a healthier, more vibrant community. We were talking a little bit about the farmers market before the break, and you were saying that you wanted to kind of, that there was still room in your market to grow the market and to bring more different types of vendors into the market. Can you talk a little bit more about your vision for that?
Yes, I thank you. I'd like to also thank Just Food for being a partner with Brooklyn Rescue Mission and other organizations around the city through city markets and helping those farmers markets come into existence. We're looking at Malcolm X Boulevard Farmers Market as well as Marcy Plaza Farmers Market for food entrepreneurs who are looking for new avenues to express themselves but also show their product. The fees are low-cost fees. At one market, there's a $25 fee. That's Malcolm X. It's an avenue-long site. It actually is a brownstone, a Bed-Stuy brownstone block, which actually could bring in 25 to 50 vendors in comfort.
Wow.
So What would happen if you had an existence of ethnic foods mixing together in the midst of Bed-Stuy? So my number, if you want to be engaged in that project, is 917-301-6747, Reverend Jackson. And we're looking for those entrepreneurs that want to be a part.
Oh, good. So, and you were saying before, you know, Bed-Stuy is such a diverse community, racially, economically. There's so many different types of people to tap into. So I think it's a great marketing opportunity for all those food entrepreneurs out there or people thinking that they might want to get into that. And can you tell us briefly what days are the markets and where people can go to experience the market?
Thank you. We have Marcy Plaza, which is on Wednesdays from 10 to 4. Marcy Plaza has a natural farmer and it has an organic farmer. And then we have a baker and some other products for your availability. We do have entertainment for the children. If you have children, we have a storytelling room and some other things. So that's at Moxie Plaza on Wednesdays between 10 and 4. Now, Malcolm X Boulevard is between 8 and 2:30. We shut off around 3 on Saturdays. Both of these markets, back up, Marcy Plaza starts on July 9th and Malcolm X starts on July 12th. They go all the way until the end of October. And we're excited about the fact that the community, once they know it's there, they always support it.
That's great. So I want to ask you really quickly about, because one of the ways that Just Food has worked with you is through a chicken project that we helped you guys develop a couple of years ago. Where did the impetus for developing a chicken project come from?
The Reverend who's servicing hungry people today at the food pantry. Reverend Devaney said, Reverend, we're going to get chickens. And I said, I don't know about chickens. She said, we're going to get chickens.
Where did her passion for chickens come from?
I think that you used to have an employee named Owen.
I did. We did. We did.
And Owen had a tremendous passion, him and your present employee, around chickens.
Yes, Greg Anderson. Yeah, we've had good chicken guys.
And she acknowledged that they were not going to steer her wrong. So she joined in.
Oh, I love it. And I know you guys got a lot of people from the community involved in that project. How does care for the chickens happen? Because I know they don't go on vacation.
No. Every day they have to eat and they have to be watered. And their chicken coop has to be clean so that they don't get sick. We had young people help us because we have a youth component at Brooklyn Rescue Mission all year round, helping to serve the community. We had seniors in the community that are familiar with chickens. Chickens had a tremendous impact, by the way, being there.
How so?
Because children are fascinated about chickens. Daycare centers come by. School kids come by. Parents introduce what chickens are to their kids. And our chickens that we were able to acquire with the help of Just Food are very tame. They don't scratch. They don't beak. You can have a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old hold them in their hands. So it has had a positive impact for young children. But the seniors, it takes them back to wherever they came from.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very happy. The neighborhood has generally been very happy to see chickens. As long as they're clean, chicken coop is clean, they're taken care of well, you're taking care of the items that keep the place pest proof, you have a winning combination.
I'm so glad to hear it. I have to tell you, you know, when you said a 2 or 3 year old, I have a 2 year old, and being able to walk down the street to one of the other chicken projects we've worked with and see my kid interact with chickens in the city, it does my heart so good. And I'm sure that's the way a lot of parents in your community must feel, that their city kids get exposed to the country in that way.
I have to say that I was amazed. You know, chickens can make 300 sounds, technically, you know.
No, I didn't know that.
They can communicate, and when you read up on chickens, 300 different language sounds.
Wow.
And I can tell you that kids were able to mimic, I'm not exaggerating, 7 to 10 of them to the point that the chickens would respond back.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. I had no idea. Now I guess I need to spend much more time with chickens. You mentioned the youth program as one of the ways that you support the Chicken Project, but you have a year-round youth program. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, we work with high schools and actually we had up to five high schools. Right now we have three high schools. So wow. We pull out young people from high schools and also neighborhood youth to be able to work on the farm all year round, believe it or not, even in the winter. And that's the alarm for about the chickens.
Oh. And chicken alarm.
And also we're able to pull them from the high schools and from the local neighborhood, but we're also able to have missions projects and kids come in from other places that want to be engaged.
So how do you engage are the youth volunteers? Are they trained and paid? How does that project work?
Actually, we have both. Mm-hmm. We have volunteers. We have summer youth in the summer youth program. In fact, I'm interviewing some of those today. And then we have kids that are interns that are on either Brooklyn Rescue Mission's payroll, which is always small, but mm-hmm. then we have our high school kids that are paid through internships as well.
Mm-hmm. It's so great to be able to.
I love volunteers. We love them, but sometimes every now and then you're teaching kids through job training so they get a check.
That's good. That's great. And so the Summer Youth Employment Program, how does that work for you guys?
Well, we're getting some kids that will be able to help us through feeding hungry people. And then also we'll have kids working on the farm to help us plant seeds, water, a weed, harvest. But they also will take care of our fish. So we have aquaponics project. They'll take care of the fish as well as the chickens and the worms for the composting.
How long have you had an aquaponics project? I didn't know that.
Oh, about 4 years.
Oh, you've had it a long time.
So we have an aquaponics project that we're retooling, and we have hydroponics, which is growing plants in liquid medium as well.
How did you get that project started?
We started that with a gentleman named Martin Shriveman, which is out of Brooklyn College.
Uh-huh.
He's very much into aquaponics as well as food growth. And he's Brooklyn College Emeritus. So he's a big brother and a partner in helping us produce these products, along with our mentor, Will Allen, out of Growing Power, out of Milwaukee.
So it's aquaponics. So I think probably most people know that means that you're raising fish and that the fish wastes are fertilizing food in something that looks like a hydroponic setup. Or food, vegetables usually,
yes.
And herbs.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of fish are you raising?
Very something simple, goldfish.
Goldfish?
Goldfish handle cold weather uh-huh. and climates. If you can have an ice block, they can eat from the bottom and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas tilapia need 85 degree temperature management.
So great in the summer, not so good in the winters.
Right. So anybody that's growing tilapia, by the way, there's over 100 tilapia breeds. But when you're growing tilapia, you have to be able to make sure that you're going to have your climate and your pH all structured so that you're not losing fish or they get diseased. So we're going to do about 50 to 70 tilapia. We're actually doing a fundraising campaign, like we're going to talk about the chicken fundraising campaign
uh-huh.
for our fish too.
Great. Okay, so how are you going to do that? So we only have about a minute left. So if people want to support your campaign to help bring in some fish, how can they learn about that?
They can call me at that number, 917-301-6747. They can also go to our Brooklyn Rescue Mission website, which is on web. Brooklyn Rescue Mission, all you got to do is Google us. We'll come up. And then donate, because we have a donate button to our fish project.
Awesome. All right. Reverend Jackson, thank you so much for making the time and coming out to meet with me today. I'm afraid that's all the time that we have. I also want to thank Liz Smith, who's engineering today's show. Hopefully this story has helped to inspire you to create your own Just Food story. You can always find archived episodes of Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org or as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And remember, if you have any questions for the program, you can call in live at 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you so much and see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. We played on the street. We made a little coin.